We're starting the podcast now. Well, hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Standby Moments podcast. We're so excited you're here. It's your hosts, Jeremy the Bullfrog LeCompt.
We're still on that.
And
Maggie.
You're so boring. And producer.
Hello.
Producer S. One day, and maybe an episode in season three, we'll come up with like a really good name for you. We're still on the fence about where we're at with you, Whitney. Well, hey everybody, welcome back to the Standby Moments podcast. We are excited that you're here. We missed you. It's been a long
2 weeks.
2 weeks, we think, and lots happened. Maybe in 2 weeks, maybe not. We're not really interested in talking about a whole lot today.
Yeah, because we have a pretty
dope
episode for y'all.
It's a little different.
With our dear friend, Josh McClymont.
Yeah. He was a lot of fun.
Joshua.
Yeah, you better call him Joshua. That is respectful.
Okay.
It's his name. Joshua.
Yeah, I don't know where I picked up Josh.
Every now and then he'll be called Josh, but I think he prefers Joshua.
That's how another Joshua
of ours. Joshua.
Okay.
Another Joshua of ours prefers that too.
I'll try my best. Anyway, so yeah, he's awesome today. So we'll keep our intro short. Josh was the director of Phantom. I don't know that we ever said that. Now looking back, we definitely said that he was largely involved, but just so everybody knows, he directed it.
Big dog.
Yeah. And so we thought that maybe we would just talk about my experience tech-wise with Phantom.
Mm-hmm.
For a second to intro into Josh, since we didn't really talk about it all that much because there was a lot of other amazing things about Joshua besides just Phantom.
Many goats.
Yeah, exactly. But before we get into that, did you have any updates to share?
No, I got nothing. I don't think.
Last week you had a lot.
Yeah.
Nothing major?
No. I'm not feeling it. I don't know. I don't know if I have anything to talk about.
Okay. Well, that's good. Makes it short and sweet.
Are you saying that I'm the reason things are long?
No, it's just that we don't have any news from you to share.
No news. No news is good news.
No news. I mean, I don't think we share bad news on here.
I mean, we did once. Did Whitney share her story yet? Oh, my goodness.
Oh. I don't know if it's time. Is it time, Whitney?
Holy mackerel.
I don't think this is because you want to talk about
Phantom
the night. So I think we need to talk about.
We have a little bit more time.
Is this
but
the
whenever
one?
Whenever this one comes out, we'll still have time.
Exactly.
After.
So,
holy smokes.
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
No.
Did we work out the timing here?
We didn't.
We did. Oh, we are such.
No, it'll have to.
But I think everybody will have.
It's okay.
The world will know.
Can you tell us about the Thursday night?
Whitney.
Whitney's trying to change this.
Producer.
We'll bring it up later.
It's not like I'm leaving here.
That's exactly what's happening, Whitney.
Did you just share the news without sharing the news?
No. I'm at the podcast.
We're moving on. Tell us about Phantom.
Yeah, so
I'm so upset right now.
So the Thursday night of Phantom.
What is going on? No, don't you. Don't. Just
pick
don't.
Up the microphone.
The hole's already so deep. Emotional wreck now. I was fine.
I've cried so many times this week.
And I've not watched any movies. Okay, go. Phantom. Now.
Hurry up, theater. Change the topic.
Theater.
Yeah, I guess we just never talked about it. It was we talked leading up to it that it was coming up. But yeah, at the end of it all, it was amazing.
Hey, for those people who might listen to this and may not know what Phantom is.
So it's Phantom of the Opera. It's a musical by Andrew Lloyd Webber. It's a very popular musical that was on Broadway for 30-ish years. It is no longer on Broadway anymore, but it is in other various locations around the globe, specifically England somewhere.
And it was in Lafayette.
It was in Lafayette because Lafayette CYT did it.
Got it.
The Children's Youth Theater here in town that I'm the technical director for did it.
And lighting designer.
Yes, and I'm the lighting designer. So, yeah, it was a massive project. Everybody was super excited about it whenever it was announced. And we are all very proud of it and how it turned out. It was no easy thing from beginning to end. So I only came in. I mean, I was in most of the rehearsal processes. So I knew what was happening most of the time. I was in some decision making, but there were so many hands on this project that it was a true team effort to make this come alive, from parents to staff to the children. It was wild. So a defining factor of Phantom of the Opera is that there is a chandelier that starts off on whenever you walk into the theater. It is on stage. And then after the or during the overture of the show, it raises up. And the idea,
what is an overture?
An overture is kind of it's a musical number. I believe it's to like get you into the story. It kind of is a mashup of a lot of the musical numbers that will take place in the show. But it's just to give you like a little prelude to like put your headspace where it needs to be, rather than just starting off into
pregame.
Like, yeah, just dialogue, and you're like, what is going on? We should have asked Josh. He would have probably had more of a
missed opportunity,
more of a description about it. So anyway, the idea is, starts off, you're in an auction house. They auction off the chandelier. It gets raised into the ceiling, and with the idea is we go back in time to whenever this opera house was thriving. And then at intermission, the chandelier falls, because the idea is the phantom that resides in the opera house has warned them to do certain things. They have not done those certain things, so he drops a chandelier, which at the time would have been candles. He drops it, and people are hurt. And so that is a major plot point of the show, and a major like thing that this Broadway show did at the time that it came to Broadway. It was like really huge for that function to be able to happen. The chandelier is always like gorgeous, and it lights up and does all kind of stuff. So that's a major thing. And then there's just a bunch of other pivotal effects that happen in Phantom. And I think that they are so pivotal because they were groundbreaking at the time. So there were certain things that we wanted to accomplish, a chandelier being one of them. And so we achieved it. We went in Saturday, which you'd be usually loaded on Sunday, but we went in Saturday, installed the chandelier, had a rigger come in and install it, test that it went up and down. Matt Whittle, who is a parent slash professional, he'll be on the podcast soon.
Yay.
He built the chandelier for us, and it was gorgeous. I got control over it, so I can control it, make it flash and all that stuff. So yeah, we got it going. Then we loaded everything else in. Everything else was going good. We had the dry ice. We had the boat steering itself.
How many pounds of dry ice did you have?
So we went through 800 pounds of dry ice. Shout out to Amanda.
Amanda Campbell.
Who owns a medical delivery company. And she had supplied dry ice to the Bayou before, and so I knew to reach out to her. And I originally reached out and I was like, hey, how much do you think we need? And it started off, we were like, well, we may need probably 50 pounds per show. And then, so that would have put us at, what's 50 times 8?
45, 450, all right?
Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, seven, eight. Yeah, so we needed eight times. So
400 pounds.
400 pounds. And then we decided, you know, I think we need...
Let's double it.
100 pounds per show. And it was super funny because the first day that we had the dry ice and the machines hooked up, we didn't have a scale. And so I didn't know, we didn't know, like, we knew we had a rolling crate with 400 pounds of dry ice into it, but I didn't know how to divvy that up and how to collect 50 pounds. So we, like, got a stage weight, and we were, like, holding the stage weight, which is 25 pounds, and holding a bucket, and we were like, this seems about the same. So we put it, we filled the dry ice machines, and so, and we were like, man, it's just not enough. Like, there's no way. I was like, I can't order my more dry ice because I had ordered 800 pounds. We were getting it in two different deliveries. And so I, the next day I went, got a luggage scale and I tested what we put in and we only used 25 pounds for both, for like everything, the full like dress rehearsal.
Oh no.
And so we used a fourth of what we used for the next several shows. So it ended up working out great, just fine. Monday, Tuesday, and so we opened Thursday. So Monday and Tuesday, Wednesday went fine, as best as you can expect with like as much that we were trying to do in 3 days, right? So it was only the things that were falling short were to be expected. Like nobody expected this to go perfectly as hard as we tried. So we got to, but Wednesday night we ran it and I was like, okay, we have something. I was like, I was worried for a second, but Wednesday night I was like,
you had the feels,
we did it. I was like, it's going to be great. I was like, this is what needs to happen. So we left the theater, everything's fine. Thursday night, opening night, and there's still like those jitters that I have spoken about before, and it's not even that I don't think it'll be good, but it's like I'm unsure of what's going to happen, right? Because I'm like, there's some things that haven't been, we've ran them and they've worked, but not full out through show, right? So we kick off the show, the chandelier raises, which every night, like I held my breath through that whole part. Because I was like, the chandelier is not going to fall. I'm not worried about the chandelier falling on anybody.
Not at all.
I was like, I am worried about it getting stuck. And I was like, if it gets stuck, that some, I think Callie looked at me. She was like, what happens if it gets stuck? I said, we cut it down. Like, there's nothing else we can do. Like, so I was like, there, and nobody gave, we'll have to, like, empty the theater at least halfway to, like, get up and get the chandelier. I was like, it just can't get stuck. So it didn't get stuck. It went up just fine. Hold on, I have a list because something happened with it. Because Thursday night was a wild one. So, oh, so before
Daggum, chandelier, look at that list.
Yeah, before the chandelier, let me go back to pre-show. Somebody asked me something about the dry ice, and I was like, yeah, I got it covered. And in my head, whenever they said that, I remembered I didn't turn on the dry ice machines, and they take about an hour to heat up. So I grab one of the dads because they see me like, they're like, hey, can I help? And I was like, yeah. So I'm like, we have to empty this dry ice machine. So we go outside. I dump the water that's in it. And so then we go into the closet and I get the water as hot as I possibly can. Like it's smoking. And I start filling up the dry ice machine to try and get it, the water at least halfway hot so that it has the first 20 minutes of show to warm up.
Yeah.
So like we fill it up, close it, get it back to where it needs to. I flip it on and it was actually the correct temperature it needed.
No way.
It was like, no, it clicked way off. It was like, it was ready. It was ready to go. So bypass all of that.
Dang.
So I am like, and we finish that right before go time. Right. So put that in there. So then the chandelier starts to take off and it is a little bit off tilt. Like I notice it and I'm like, what's going to happen maybe is that like, it's going to go up and then it's going to drop into place. Like, cause it's like just caught on something a little bit.
And it's three tier.
Yeah. It's three tier. So like the first two tiers were like kind of together.
And they're, nobody welded
noticed
together
but me.
The rings, there's a ring and they're welded together, and there's chains that
hold it. There's chains. The chains were like twisted a little bit. So you noticed that it was a little bit off tilt. Probably only me. I didn't tell anybody. I was just like, what? Can't stop now. So we get about a third of the way into the first act. And if anybody knows Phantom, it's the part where one of the lead people in the opera are singing, and then the Phantom like drops something out of the sky and everybody freaks out. So that part happened, and then right after that I hear a click and all of my lights just start freaking out, just like strobing, freaking out. I look over at Mitch's whole sound console off. I still have like my two screens that were in front of me were turning on and off.
Yeah, you guys alluded to this, but you didn't share it with me.
And my computer was, luckily I was running off of my laptop, so my laptop never lost power.
Praise God.
So I never had to reboot, but Mitch had to reboot.
I would've
peed
my pants.
If I was on Angel's console,
yeah, it would have been done.
I would have been down for like 10 minutes because that console is old and it takes about 10 minutes to reboot.
So
I was like, I immediately came back on, but we are like looking around. I look at Josh, who is trying to figure out what's happening. Everybody realizes something wrong because they see my screens turning on and off. And I jump up and I just kept hearing the clicking. And so in my mind, I was like, we need to unplug. Like, I looked over at Mitch and like his console just kept flipping, and I was like, he needs to unplug it. Like, it'll short. Like, something's gonna happen. So before I can say anything, it like starts to feel like it's coming back, and I get on the headset, and because if you know Angel, the power is not good in the building. And so we've had flips before. But in my head, I'm like, there's no way that my lights, the console, like all everything flipped. Like it would just be one breaker backstage. But I was like, tell any mom who just plugged in a blow dryer or anything to unplug it. I was like, tell them to unplug backstage. Because that's what I pictured happening. I pictured either like a blow dryer being plugged in, everything goes down. Or like Ken putting something in the microwave and it going off. Like, that's what I was picturing happening.
We've had that happen here.
Yeah, so I was trying to figure it out, couldn't get it. So then we started to get that, like, it was a transformer. For some reason, like, somebody posted, or the lights out other places, it was a transformer down the road blew, but we were on generator power because we're next to the hospital. So we clicked on fairly soon, but I'm telling you, Josh was, like, walking down the aisle to stop the show for a second. And I'm telling you, whenever he almost got to the end, everything just clicked back on. And the kids never broke character at all. They didn't even realize something happened. Nobody knew anything happened except us. And if you were like in the back and you realized what was going on.
Really?
Yes. I'm telling you, like, so many people came up and they were like,
thought it was part of the show.
And we were like, you didn't see that? And they're like, no.
And
like,
but the audio dropped as well, right?
Yeah, but the kids, it was just talking, and the kids were still projecting. And also, the orchestra, if they were playing, you could still hear them, kind of, because it's a live orchestra.
Yeah.
So nothing, it just got quieter. And the only reason that I knew, like, I almost knew before it, like, I saw it, was because you know how that, like, whenever things go off, it just gets silent and quiet? That's what happened. Like, it just, everything went, whoop, and I was like, oh, no. And then everything just, like, clicked off. So we got back on. We were just hoping that it wasn't going to happen again. And it didn't, thank goodness. So we got through that. There was some random lighting cues that took place that I was just like beside myself on. at intermission, so the chandelier drops and then it gets raised back up during intermission when everybody's like walking around to like not draw attention to it. Whenever it goes back up, there's just like a bead hanging off of it. Just like hanging down. We told Billy, who was the conductor, hanging, like, he was sitting right below it. We were like, if you see a bead or if something hits anybody, that's what it is. So he knew. I realized that, like, a whole song that I had programmed was programmed over. I'm hitting, like, 20 light cues and nothing's changing. But luckily you couldn't notice. Like, it was fine. Only me. So there's just things that just kept happening. I'm sure everybody has their own list. But the final, the finale, the way that we ended the show, and I will forever have nightmares about, and will, I honestly texted the rest of the group chat, and I was like, I quit. If anybody wants a console, it's for sale. I'm done. Like, I am completely done. Was because I said, so there's an ending moment, and it is supposed to be, to me, I'm like, it is the darkest moment of the show. We are going blackout for the last number before bows, right? And I hit, oh, and so also the Phantom has to disappear, and there's an effect that he does, and this effect is not working. It is not, and we are stressed. We are stressed. The audience is stressed. Everybody's in duress that this effect is not working. And we see a girl who's not supposed to see the Phantom because he's supposed to disappear come on stage, and we're like, slow down, slow down, slow down. But she can't hear us, and so she just keeps going. So, like, the Phantom just, he does it, he disappears, and so I go to go blackout to just take us out, like, to escape. I hit go, and the house lights come up full blast. And I just freeze. And, like, lock up.
Dead.
And I hurry up and turn them off. And I look over. And someone, I think it was Nikki, she's just, like, in the headset. She's like, Maggie, breathe. It's okay. And I was like, it is not okay. It is not okay. And Mr. Gerald comes up behind me and just, like squeezes my shoulder. And I'm like, it's not okay. It's not okay. Whitney's next to me. And she looks over at me. And I'm like, I'm not okay. The show ends, and I'm like, I text him, I'm like, I'm done. So the next day I literally sat in the dark and made sure that nothing was programmed wrong, redid everything. The rest of the shows, I'm telling you, I can say this now because they're over, the rest of the shows went flawless. nothing ever happened again. Every show was just like clockwork. Like, we had it down.
Had to get it out.
It would, but that should have happened Wednesday.
No, not it doesn't Thursday. Ever happen that way.
And it was funny because Wednesday we were like, this isn't that good because we needed things to happen bad tonight and nothing did. So yeah, it all came out on opening night, but after that, and it was still, regardless, it was an amazing show. Yeah. The kids did wonderfully. Everything else went just fine. Like, the dry ice happened. I did, after that show, the conductor came up. He was like, hey.
smoked them out.
We couldn't see like 10 lines of music because you like put so much dry ice. And I was like, I can't control that. You're gonna have to figure it out. So I put someone with a fan down in the pit blowing it out. Yeah, it was super, super fun. And I am super honored to have done it.
Yeah, that's one of those, it's a resume. That's a resume builder.
It's a once-in-a-lifetime show.
The right cast, the right crew, the right tech, the right...
Yeah.
Just everything falls in place, and it's... you might do it again, but it'll never be that.
Yeah. Talking about right cast, or right crew, we have the man in charge of
Mr.
it. Mr. Director, Josh McClymont. Welcome back. Today, we are here with our dear and male friend, Josh McClymont.
Thanks for that clarity. That's not going to confuse anybody. Appreciate that.
But yeah, Josh is with us today. Josh is one of our close friends that we met through this industry of theater and also church as well.
Mm-hmm.
And we have grown fond of him. So we decided to invite him on and talk to him a little bit.
Well, I appreciate that.
Full disclosure, I have no idea what we're talking about.
Wonderful.
They have pre-populated these things.
Whoa.
And I have intentionally not been a part of it, mostly because I missed lunch yesterday.
Oh.
But secondly, because I'm going to bring in the random.
I love it.
Are you ready for this?
Yeah, bro.
Jeremy's meeting you for the first time.
Let's embrace a little improv.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, Josh.
Oh, gosh. That's a small question.
Where'd you come from?
I wanted to go straight level three questions. They told me no.
Okay. All right.
This is a level one.
Yeah. Well, I come from the north. I grew up in New Jersey. Spent a little time in Ohio for college. I got my BFA in performing arts at Miami.
What is that?
My Bachelor of Fine Arts.
Oh.
Very hoity-toity.
Mm.
Yeah.
Bougie.
No BA for me. BFA, another initial on the tag. It's big. I get a lot of second looks with that. So then, I got my BFA in performing. I spent a year touring with the Children's Theater out west, and that's where I really cut my teeth as an educator and realized I really enjoy working with kiddos. Moved to Atlanta, worked at a private school down there as a middle school theater teacher and then opera school, and then they asked me to chair the department. Really enjoyed administrative work. Did that for 10 years. And then we just went crazy, and we bought a farm. And it is both the proverbial and literal farm, before you ask me. Yeah. Yes. Oh, yeah. I always called it at that time the power of the in-laws. They were like, why don't you move a little bit closer than the 9 hours, and why don't you buy a farm?
At that, yeah. Don't just move closer. Buy a farm.
So we were like, well, yeah, I'm a theater major. I know all about farming. Let's do it. Yeah. Yeah.
Where was the farm?
Plain City, Ohio.
All right.
The Amish town. Yeah, ooh. We bought it from
Did you have electricity? Couple.
Bro, we did. But you have well water. The whole thing. I mean, horse-drawn carriage.
Did you have outhouse?
They're out there. We had some plumbing. That
okay,
was nice.
Good yeah, for yeah, you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Moving up. It's kind of frowned upon with the true Amish.
Well,
that's
did
a
you feel
whole other, you need to do a podcast on Amish?
On Amish?
Oh, bro.
I feel like we
so,
could.
So, really quick side note on the Amish: if you're driving from Chicago to here, you will pass through a good like some Amish.
Yeah.
But if they have billboards that you turn the radio to a certain station and it's Christian teachings or whatnot, but if you the AM channels are some crazy places to be in the Midwest, just hanging out in there.
Why do you know this?
Because I had to drive from Chicago to here.
Oh yeah.
And I did. I don't think I had service for a little bit, so I just went to the AM channels just to like see what was up, and it is scary. It's creepy. But anyway, yeah, that's my experience.
That's your side note. Story.
It was in the area, and a lot of the stations were such.
I see. DJ Amish flash and stuff. That is awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, the Amish are lovely people. They love Disney World and vanity plates. That's what I always say. So they go to Florida. They love it. Anyway, so where was I? So, yeah, Jeremy, we bought a farm.
Tell me about
how did the farm
what kind
go?
Of animals?
Well, I guess the label of farm is a little misleading. We raise plants. So we did have goats, pygmy goats. They're cute.
Are those goats that that faint?
No, those are fainting goats. These would be small goats, miniature goats, but they were lovely. And they were just like an add to what we were trying to do here. So
what kind
long
of plants?
Story short, we had 18,000 square feet of greenhouse space. Yeah, and for those who are at home, their faces are pure astonishment. And that's how I felt when I signed the lease to buy this thing. I was like, wait, what?
Wait,
what
are we doing? So I remember you talking not a couple weeks ago about a greenhouse. I thought that you had no experience with greenhouses, but you do.
I didn't. Well, I do now, that's for sure.
At the time, a big one.
Yeah. Like I said, those in-laws, man, they are quick.
How did they talk you into this?
Oh, bro, that's podcast number 236.
Okay.
The power of what in-laws do to get you to move closer at the time. So, in any event, long story short, yeah, man, it was crazy. It was massive. We had like 30 different variety of just tomatoes to give you kind of an indication. Whoa. And so we propagated everything from seed, brought in our perennials. You start in February. It's a seasonal thing. And then you open in the spring.
So mostly tomatoes, though.
No, all vegetables, all annuals, perennials, the whole thing. That was
what is an annual and perennial?
Annual is one that you're replanting it every.
Got it.
Perennials, they're coming back.
On their own.
You got it. Not look
like
you.
Jesus.
Whoa. Yes. Yes, he did. Although I think the Father had something to do with it.
He replanted?
Well, I don't know. We're going deep here. We're talking about.
Okay, back to the farm.
So yeah, it was crazy, and I think what not only did neither one of us have any background in horticulture, you know, again, mm-hmm. theater major, right? But your whole livelihood depends on this, and nobody's handing you a check. And unlike, I always say, unlike, say, a pair of jeans that you might sell in retail, I can kill my product pretty easily.
Yeah.
You know? And so it was, as it turns out, the most sanctifying tool I think the Lord used ever in my life, because the first year where, just to kind of give you an indication, 80% of your income is coming in 1 month.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's like April, May, because once it gets to June, it's like it's too hot. Nobody's playing.
Yeah, anymore. You're done.
So April, if we have record snowfall like we did our first year, you're cooked. And there's the plants don't grow backwards, funny enough. So, like, you've got to mitigate this growth, and nobody's buying things, and we don't pull things off box trucks like you would Home Depot, Lowe's, et cetera. And so the stakes were immense. Yeah. And
I could not.
There were a lot of tears and a lot of, like, nights I just, like, couldn't sleep. But in another sense, it was very romantic in the true sense of work. I mean, you're getting up in the morning and you're just earning your keep. You're rolling.
Because that's all you're doing. You're working all day, every day outside.
You're doing a lot of watering. Yep, that's for sure. And you know, you try to bring your kids. But then they start to resent you because they become labor employees.
Well, that's why they had kids back in the day.
Yeah, right. That's right. Just the labor, you know.
And you only had two. You didn't have a large staff.
They were tiny. I mean, what good are they? Right? Not security, I'll tell you that much. They were terrible. So, in any event, we tried to expand it. We had a fall season, and that hence the goat. So, we brought in some animals. I planted pumpkins. We did, like, a jump house. We did farm hay rides, the whole bit. And I built a trebuchet. Are you familiar with this?
Is that the medieval thing that cut your head off?
Well, that would be a guillotine, but you're in the same genre.
Okay.
A trebuchet is a medieval siege device, unlike like a catapult. But this is the thing that flings.
Oh, for pumpkins.
Yeah, right. So a pumpkin chucker, right?
Yes. Because
nothing says fall festival like
throwing pumpkins. Amen.
Right. The Amish? Not so much pacifists. So they weren't digging it as much as I was like, yeah, this is war. What? Let's throw this. They're like, no, not so much. Okay. But the kids loved it. The kids loved it. So in any event.
Frowned upon.
It was. So we did that for about 4.5, 5 years. And man, we were through the ringer. It was tough. It was honestly, it's probably a chapter in my life that I look back, talk about a moment where I'm like, whew. I need to pause. And their life happened. My son got diagnosed with Crohn's, and nobody's handing you any check, let alone an insurance check. And so we didn't have insurance. We're doing the whole out-of-pocket thing. And my mom got sick with pancreatic cancer, died in 2 weeks. So I was like, all right, I'm ready to move out. And so I threw my name in the hat with a school down here called Ascension Episcopal School. They were looking for a director of fine and performing arts. And the head of school, I said, I kind of laugh, because he's like, you want to move to Lafayette? And I was like, I know the South. I lived in Atlanta. I mean, what? Yeah. It's a little different.
No.
A little different.
Not the same.
So, no, but he was kind enough. He took a big risk, and he said, look, I've talked to the school you worked for in Atlanta. Know what you can do. And at the time, Ascension was trying to really build their program, and that's where I feel like I can add something is, you know, if you have some good bones in your department, I can come in and really beef it up. And so we were able to do that. And soon after, went back to school, got a master's, and then also got hooked up with CYT.
Master's in what?
Educational leadership. I went up to Penn and got that. That was interesting. So Philly. You ever spend time in Philly?
That's where my mom – no, not my mom. Sometimes feels like my mom. My wife. She takes care of me.
Are we going to edit that?
Yeah. No. Okay. This is a no-edit podcast. Right on. No. She's going to appreciate the statement. Yeah. She's in Pennsylvania currently.
So you got it. Yeah. So Philly. It's a good – we could do a podcast on Philly if you want. No.
I had a Philly cheesesteak one time. I didn't dig it.
This is my story of Philly. I don't know if this is going to get edited out, but I'm an avid runner, and so I'm running down the streets of Philadelphia, and I
running away from something to something.
No. I'm just running.
Okay. Right? Forrest Gump style.
Yeah. In that my shorts were very short, and I was going. Okay. So I'm running, and I'm going down the street, and I soon find that the sidewalks are full. So I'm kind of pushed out to the streets a little bit, right? So I'm running. And I quickly find out that I have run into quite literally a parade. I'm going with the direction of the parade. And not only that, It is a naked bicycle parade.
No!
So all of a sudden, I look behind me, and there are people who have no clothes on with bicycles, and I realize
so
the
then
cheering...
So you are running from something.
The cheering that I got from the sides was not just for my athletic prowess. It was, take it off. Take it off. And I thought... I am stuck. I could not get out of the road because the sidewalks are full. And so I'm trying to avert my eyes because, believe it or not, the people who do naked bicycle parades probably should not be doing bicycle naked parades.
Fair.
I got that, you know.
That's fair.
So anyway, I was able to leave the parade route after a little bit. So that's my experience with Philly.
That's amazing.
It was good.
Did you move after that?
No, I was just commuting because I was living down here, commuting up to Philly.
Holy
every
smokes.
Once a month, yeah, to get my master's.
You were committed,
bro.
No online program.
Nope. You did some. We did like once a week, but you had to be there once a weekend for a month.
Wow.
One weekend every month. Yeah, and then we had a summer program. It was intense. No doubt.
Worth it?
Yeah, I think it was. You know, at the time, I thought maybe I'll go into other admin positions, like head of school, director of, you know, a campus, a principal. That hasn't panned out, but I do love education. I really am passionate about working with kids, and I think I did get some stuff. It was interesting. The North and the South are a little bit different. I don't know if you guys are familiar with not only the bicycle parades, but
we have one of those.
Do we?
In New Orleans.
Oh, sure. Sure, that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, it's New Orleans.
Not Lafayette.
Yeah. Sorry, continue.
And then even no, it was. It was. I gleaned a lot of information from that program. It was tough, but it was good. It was intense. Hmm. Yeah.
I'm going to go to another question. So you mentioned moving, going to University of Miami to get your BFA in theater.
Yeah, and I don't want to be split hairs here, but it is Miami University.
Sorry.
U of M is in Florida. And in fact, Miami University was founded before Florida was even a part of the union. So the story is that the mayor of Miami, Florida, wrote the president of Miami University in Oxford, Ohio, and asked him to change the name. Yeah.
Oh, so University of Miami, where you went, Miami University is in Ohio.
You got it. Oxford, Ohio.
So, I'm okay. Glad we're correcting
I'm
this because I was
like. That.
No, he didn't. When did you go to Florida? That's what I thought. I was like,
I'm sorry. This is something that I should have clarified in the beginning of the podcast. Miami University is in Oxford, Ohio. It was founded in 1809. It was modeled after Oxford, England. Red brick. It's a beautiful. It's called the Ivy of the Midwest, Whitney. I'm just saying. It's a tough school. Actually, funny story. I didn't even get accepted.
This you just great. Showed up?
I applied to two schools. Actually, my brothers went to Messiah University.
Very
shout
Bob
out
Goff
to the,
of him showing up
to the Falcons. No, I was going to go to East Stroudsburg, which was where the office is. You know, Stroudsburg. Anyway, it's right in that area. But I took a flyer. I was like, Miami, because I knew the director at my high school went to their theater program. I've never been to Ohio, mind you, from New Jersey, and I knew that they had a good running program because a girl at my high school went there. So I'm like, okay, I'll go. I'm not quite the scholar in high school. I'm still not. But anyway, I sent in all my things, all my information, SAT, whatever. They were doing that back then. I don't think they do SAT anymore. But nevertheless, and they're like, yeah, sorry, you can't get in. And I at the time, I did a film, not an interview, but audition, VHS tape. Are we familiar with these things?
Yes.
So I sent that in. My audition, I can't even remember what I did. I didn't sing. This is just performance, not musical theater. And the department chair called me a week later and said, hey, are you ready to come to Miami? I said, well, ma'am, I actually, we don't say ma'am in New Jersey. What am I saying?
What did you
I was
say?
Like, yo.
Yo. Yo.
I just said, unfortunately, I didn't get it admitted to the university. I'm not getting it. She said, okay, hold on. Hung up the phone. 3 minutes later, she said, are you coming to Miami? I got you in. So I was like, At the time, I should have been more skeptical because it was hard.
That's a very Rudy story.
Yeah, it was great. It was great until I took like physics. And I was like, what the what? This is not good. What did I sign up for? No, it was great. To go back to your original question, the BFA, you have like this studio class. It's like a conservatory degree in a liberal arts school. That's what I say. So people who go and do conservatory, like NYU or Juilliard, those are like, that's all you're doing for four years. A BFA program, you get kind of
that physics.
You get you have to take a year or two. A BA program, it's you can take musical theater, you don't have to, but a BFA is kind of intense.
It makes you a little more functional in life,
perhaps.
A BFA. That's what it's just. I didn't know that this was a thing until they pointed it out at school. I was just like, I'm just going for theater. I don't care what kind.
I like that. I hope you said it like that too.
Getting a degree.
I just want to do theater.
So I learned about theater.
I appreciate, by the way, both of you pronouncing it the way you do.
Stand by.
Okay.
I learned about theater in 2018. Okay. Do you know Carol Mills?
Yes.
Okay. I was sitting in the conference room one day. And we're talking about, I think, CYT, or said something, and I was like, yeah, I'm going to go to the theater. And Carol Mills whipped her head around, looked at me, and she said, it is theater.
Yeah, I can see
that. And I said,
especially the
what's the difference?
Yeah.
And she said, there's a big difference. And then she explained to me what the difference was. And, like, ever since then, I work really hard to say it right. I really appreciate that.
Yeah. Because I chastise my students all the time. I'm like, what are we doing, some theater? You know? You want to do some theater and get your little BFA over here? Right? No. And if we really want to be pedantic, T-H-E-A-T-E-R is the space. T-H-E-A-T-R-E is the activity. So when you spell it.
You're above my head, Joshua.
All right. Well.
I don't have a degree.
I think I'm short.
I have a degree of hard knocks.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah.
Oh, you're
no education.
No, that's not true.
I'm telling you that. You just gave me
formal.
You just gave me some $10 words.
All right.
I would be broke in the bank. You know what I'm saying?
Anyway, so what precursor led to you wanting to get a degree in theater?
Well, standby. Hold on.
By the way, the president wrote him back and said, I just want to remind you that we were a university before you were even a state.
There we go. Back to the finish. Okay.
Isn't that good?
Because I got to tell you, I'm with Governor Man, founder of Florida, whatever.
Oh, you are? You're asking the university?
Yeah, I'm like, what the heck, man?
Yeah,
this
I'm
is
writing,
confusing. When people are Googling Miami, Florida.
Yeah, but we're.
Can you imagine how many people thought that they were going to Miami and then ended up in Ohio?
Well, that's why if you watch basketball games, a lot of them say Miami of OU, like Miami of Ohio, because people now only think about Florida. But again, this was founded in 1809. Like, it's old. It's named after the Miami Valley
Ohio. They need to read the book, Miami Who Moved Tribe. My Cheese.
All right. That's fine. What can I say? All right. Miami.
So what led you to wanting a theater degree?
So it just comes right off theater.
No,
you did great. You did great. I'm just loving it. I'm loving it. I feel like if there's one legacy point that I've left, maybe it's just to get more people to pronounce it.
I honestly don't know the other way to say it.
Theater.
Theater.
Where you go and watch a movie. That's,
yeah.
That's a you movie. Go theater. To
theater. Theater.
Like what? What?
But how am I saying it? Because now I'm going to get in my head about it.
Yeah.
Hey, could we move on with the question, please?
Sorry.
I was in high school. I did community theater in high school. And probably my mom had a lot to do. I'm the youngest of six boys, and I was the last attempt
at
a girl.
Holy smokes.
Yeah. There's 6.5 years between me and my next brother. Again, they're all boys. Let's try to for a girl.
Your mom is a saint.
I came out with the wrong equipment. They're like, what are we going to do with this guy?
Don't worry. The Wendy's drive-thru person will
I know.
It went from so much. Jessica to Joshua.
I was supposed to be Joy, believe it or not. That was my name. Thank you. Joy Heather. I mean, what? So Joshua Paul. It's got a little more biblical ring to it. I don't know where they went with that. So in any event, my mom probably had a lot of influence on that. She was always encouraging me to do things. And then in high school, and then I did community theater. And then I was like, yeah, I want to do this, I think. And my dad is my dad growing up, I don't know how to put that in a nutshell. He was like really academic. he did all the degrees and then some. And so having his youngest be like, hey, let's do some theater, you know, I'm in hindsight, I'm like, wow, I'm surprised he let me do that. So, and didn't steer me elsewhere, but he did.
Well, he had, were your brothers academic?
Yeah, for the most part. Yes and no. They certainly didn't go into the arts, that's for sure.
I feel like by six, he doesn't care.
He doesn't even know who I am.
Right? Oh, my goodness.
Which is true. And I'm sorry, who? Oh, yeah. What do you want to do? Sure, go. Do it.
That's so good.
Great.
Whitney can't
you
help.
I think you broke Whitney over there.
Because I know it's true.
It is true. It is true.
So... Anyway, Whitney brought this to our attention, and I was like, okay. Yeah, I was thinking about this, too, along with the goat. So I didn't know
back about to the goats.
I just thought, side note, I did Hunchback of Notre Dame with Josh. And Joshua. Our first...
Thank you.
Sorry, Joshua. Our first production meeting, he mentioned that he wanted a goat in the production, and it got shut down.
It did.
He's going into the archives, though.
Nobody has the vision of goats in productions the way I do.
It would have been the perfect, there is a goat. It's a very distinguished factor. But he showed up to our last performance with a goat while we were all taking a full cast photo. And I was like, wow, he seems so comfortable with a goat.
Shut up.
we'll attach the picture to the thing.
And your hair was different color,
wasn't it? Yeah. There was a lot of life going on at that time.
He matched the goat.
I needed a therapy goat. That's
Josh,
for sure.
I think I'm gonna be just like you when I grow up.
But I was just like, wow, Josh is really comfortable with this goat. Didn't know that you had previous experience.
I'm
with
a handler.
Goats.
I'm a handler.
You can handle kids and goats.
And they're both kids.
That's a resume builder right there. Yeah.
But besides the goat, the other thing that Whitney brought to attention was you seem to have an approach on life, which influences a lot of your decisions and artistic endeavors, both work-wise and relationship-wise. Would you say that this is true?
Yeah, and she's so dear. I would say everybody has an approach. The question is it a positive one or a negative one? So I'm really hoping that there was a follow-up conversation or was it, purposeful or just random? You know, I guess you could quantify any doing with, oh, well, that's, as I say to the kids, well, that's a choice, you know, when somebody's on stage and I'm like, it may have not been a good one, but it's a choice.
Hey, as long as you make the choice,
right.
That's great.
So, yes, I have an approach, I would say. Sometimes I'm cognizant of it, and sometimes it happens to me, to be fair.
Whitney, can I clarify?
Yeah. Producer.
I asked that question because I will say, I think we all strive to be people who are consistent with being who we are in every facet of our lives, and not many people can do it so well. Joshua does it very well. Joshua is who he is with everyone and with every situation. And I think, because I know him well, it comes from a very specific way that he lives his life. And so I think it's awesome and beautiful. And so that's why I asked that question.
Well, that's a very, very nice thing for you to say. I sure hope that is the case. So thank you. That's very thoughtful of you to say. It's humbling. That's for sure.
So what is the way?
Well, like I said, I think sometimes it happens to me, and it's just about a matter of reacting to it than being proactive and diving into it. But I would say, and again, she's being very generous, I think I probably fail more often than I succeed. But I do try to run everything through the grid of Scripture and really trying to be mindful of what Christ would have me do in that particular moment, which sounds so like, yeah, I've heard that one before, but I think it's through not doing it well where I've really learned how to try to be consistent, because within the gospel is that ability to fail. And so just trying to walk through that, and that's hard. But again, there's always this battle in between, and whether it's being a part of a team, artistic team, or being a part of a process when you're faced with things, or you're faced with a comment that it's like, ooh, now you're face to face with yourself, and you're like, oh, I don't know if I like this guy. And so some of it, I have to say, is kind of like gravity. It just, I think age does a lot to you, and it's crazy that I'm nearing 50, and I think the things that were paramount are penultimate now. And certainly my career or accomplishments, you know, are waning, you know, and more of the relationships and trying to be consistent, because it would break my heart if I left and they're like, well, great product, but gosh, you burned through that whole thing. That would be hard.
So it's interesting that you say that, because I've actually been thinking about kind of that idea lately, actually the idea of failure a lot lately, and being in front with a background of arts and your bit that, you know, your business venture of being a farmer and, you know, like all of those things, you've had to have failed a whole lot. What's that process like for you? Like, especially, again, theater's very, you know, the arts are very different, and it's like, it's evolving, and it's not perfect, and it's subjective. Like, can you share with us your process of learning how to objectively view failure and not allow it to be a part of who you are, but a thing that grows you to who you are?
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be a very imperfect, precise answer. It's going to be more organic, so please steer or follow up. Interrupt me, because I'm going to roll. So just interrupt. But I would say one of them, I mean, the heart of what you're asking, I think, is about identity and your identity be wrapped up into what you do versus who you are and ultimately your birth, your new birth. And so I think some of that is time. Some of that is age of just having that perspective. And some of that is just in a small way. One of the things I'm learning now a lot about is conflict. And conflict resolution. And I grew up with a very, not a great example of how to work through conflict, right? Like, we're rolling up our sleeves and we're going to yell and get angry and we're going to be not at all. And through relationships that I've had, not the least of which is Miss Whitney, she's helped quite a bit, I think, being on artistic teams and being able to step back and see things from a different perspective. Man, that's been huge. There are things that I can say in my life like I feel like I've grown in that, because I don't know, it just feels kind of presumptuous. Like, have you really? And then that kind of niggles in your mind. You're like, you haven't changed. You're the same, right? But I honestly feel like, although I don't know if people listening to this will think it, I do feel like there has been growth with my ability to walk through difficult conversations. And one of the ways is trying desperately to receive those difficult conversations. So I was with somebody, I'll just give you this quick example, who means a lot to me, and we were having a conversation, and I had been stewing on this piece of information that I wanted to share with this individual, and not that it painted them in a poor light, but it wasn't like positive. I'm spending like 2 weeks going through every conversation with this person and like hypothetically, what am I going to say? Right. And it's building up and I'm like, oh gosh, I got to do it. And that I wear my heart on my sleeve. So she can tell, she's like, what's up? You know, like what's going on? And I'll never forget it. It was so poignant because I shared this feedback, if you will. And I put that in quotes for you guys who can't see, with this person. And the first thing that she said is, thank you so much for having the courage to share that. And I was just like, okay, I don't even have to tackle the issue anymore. The fact that you received not changes with like, everything. but it was, I didn't even like the thing became so secondary to how she just received. Hey, thanks for having the courage. That must have been hard for you to like think about that and bring that up. And I'm like, I'm saying something that's not nice about you. And you're saying, hey, way to go on just having the courage to bring that up. Game changer. And so that has been something that I've been trying, rather than when I hear something, to say that person probably is worked, like It's not easy for that person to say that to me because I look like, and I big air quotes, like I've got it together, or I would not receive it well. So maybe what if I responded in, hey, thanks so much for having the courage to share that. Because some people would be like, well, I don't care about his growth, so I'm not going to say it. Or he's just not worth it, or he's not going to receive it well. Because things weren't, again, weren't received well when growing up.
Yeah.
So having just somebody say, thanks for sharing that, I'm like, wow. It's so good and fruitful, and it just
breaks
like
down a
it's
lot of barriers.
It disarms so much stuff. So anyway, that's just kind of a microcosm of like the failure part of like trying to be that person where I can go, okay, thanks so much for taking the time and be genuine, not be like, yeah, thanks, but like really like
embracing
say, thank
it.
You so much, and then that person again, 9 out of 10 times I think feels like. Okay, just that you heard it. You're not even fixing it.
Yeah.
But just that you heard it and you weren't like, no, I'm not. You're ugly. You know?
Yeah.
It was huge. So, well, sorry, like, that was long-winded. But
on that note, I feel like we run into this as theater performers or whatnot because we've and especially if you've done like a script analysis and you spend so much time learning about other people and why they're responding to each other the same way as characters or whatnot. And then in your normal life, I know I catch myself doing this. I rehearse like conversations. If it's a difficult conversation, I'm going to rehearse and I have like, I know 50 answers that they could give me because like that would be the normal response. Like if I am in their shoes, what would their, and then, you get in these conversations, you're like, oh, we're human. We're not characters in said play when we don't know all of the variables of this person's life. So therefore, we can just have a conversation and then we will continue on with our day. We're not going to finish this story like I had planned because it's not a script. It's not planned out into a story.
Yeah. Mm. That interpersonal stuff. I'm still got so much to grow, but in any event.
Another question that I'll move on because we have a couple and I don't want to lose time.
All the phone in questions that we have. Caller, not a letter. What's going on?
Don't worry, it'll be Jamie or Lillian. We already know.
What's your favorite part of the artistic process? Because I know you went in as a performance major.
Yeah.
Now you are director, but you also do a lot of scenic work as well. And then, so that puts you in multiple parts of a process.
Yeah.
So what's your favorite?
So in the weeds, I love really spending time in, speaking of interpersonal relationships on stage and the nuances of them. Because, and again, keep this with the grid of I'm working mostly with 12, 18, sometimes 20, and some adults, certainly with CCT. But like we typically, like you had astutely pointed out to, as humans, we are complex. It's nuanced. But oftentimes when you see the parenthetical note in the script, it's angrily, you know, sadly, says this such and such line. So we have our ways of just saying, oh, okay, I'm angry. I'm going to raise my voice or I'm sad. But often, you guys know, when you're angry, sometimes you get really quiet. When you're sad, sometimes you shout. So trying to really boil down into the nuances of those relationships and different ways that we go about communicating that when you read it, you just kind of like a lot of, especially for young actors, just assume and jump into one choice. Being like, hey, what happens if we play that differently? And then what happens to that other person? And the chain reaction that takes place in that organic process. Now, if you're a stage manager and you've got 1 hour to get through this, you've given me 1 hour, I'm your worst nightmare because I've gotten through like 3 lines, you know, and they're like, McClamont, we got to hustle. Like, but I'm like, wait. So I love
something
that part.
Will happen.
I know,
it'll come. It'll click.
So that's pretty special. I think the other part is, and you guys know this, I think unlike athletics, which I love sports and I did that at Miami at Miami for a couple of years. So the idea that those have to be at loggerheads, which oftentimes with students, you have that all the time. They're like, hey, I'm either an athlete or I'm in arts, and the two can't coincide, which is hogwash. But nevertheless, there I did it. I lost my train of thought. Seeing the delayed gratification that students have to kind of have in their arsenal as an artist versus an athlete. Because an athlete, you've got a whole season of games to kind of iron things out, and then hopefully you get to the championships. You're going from practice to state championship. And so for these kids, I mean, I just think it's just different. It's just so much harder. And to get try to carry on the motivation and give them glimpses of, like, it's worth it. Stay in, stay in. It's got a spiritual component to it, right? Because we are in the trenches now. He's like, just wait. It's coming. It's coming. It's coming. And you're like, dog, this is just a grind.
Yeah.
And then for them, of course, having that, like, opening night, and they're like,
the breakthrough right? moment.
And they're like, this is great. This is what it's all worth about. So that's kind of exciting to see in, like I said, in the weeds, and then also that, like, overarching picture.
Yeah. Nice.
That's good.
Do you enjoy, this one kind of tags along with that one. Do you enjoy research and development of, like, building sets or the character development more? Like, cause you've gotten very, for those who don't know, Josh's set pieces are amazing. He usually picks like a couple per show or one, and he goes in on it, and it turns into the most detailed thing you'll ever see in your life. What was the...
The thing I always think about is that camera in Oklahoma, which was on stage for 2 seconds, but looked so real.
No, what was the last one that we did? Crazy. Was it Beauty and the Beast? Or it was like a mailbox or something? The gas tank from Footloose. It was a very...
I didn't get to see the
show.
We'll
have to attach a picture of it. So Josh goes very in, and his sets are very realistic, and they're amazing. Do you enjoy, has it shifted, or do you still enjoy that character development part more than the artistic side?
Good questions. Oh, man. What do I enjoy more? I think what I enjoy...
This is epic.
I think they're almost fruit of the same tree. You know what I'm saying? Like... It's really nice to kind of it's almost a public service for me to work on sets, because it allows me to stay connected to the show but be out off stage and not around people, which sometimes you just need that. And then being within the people, it like refuels my set of working on sets, because sometimes that's such a thankless job, and I cycle that thought in my head, which, oh, I just had another thought. But like, oh, why are you doing this? Nobody's going to see this. No, nobody cares. But I will say one of the fun things about, and it's probably, it is in some sense an epic waste of time, especially at the places that we perform, because it is so far away. Nobody's seeing the nuances of the detail of this. So you can make a case like you're wasting resources. But putting that aside, I think what's great about that is the actor's response. You know what I'm saying? Like putting say you build a house and you put a hose spigot on the side. I don't know how many audience members are going to see that, but man, that helps the actors. They're like, yeah, I feel like I'm like right in a house. Like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's rusted. That's how mine was growing, you know, and it helps them. And I for me, I love that. That's fun. And it's worth the time to do that.
Well, and I think I don't have a theater background at all, so just think this is more of me listening to y'all's conversation. But I think that means a lot, no matter what platform you're in, because if you've got a group of artists, which is what a theater show is, right? It's a group of artists. There's artists that are doing the performance. There's artists that are creating the scenes, and there's artists that are taking that and making the lights and the you know, it's all everyone's got their part, and it's all art. But when one artist doesn't put forth their best effort, in the grand scheme of what you're doing, it's easy for the rest of each for it to slowly make its way through. And it's like, okay, well, yeah, that, you know, that house is really nice, but it's not over the top. And but there's something that comes, there's an energy that comes from that, and it's like, well, it's not that real, so we don't have to be that real.
Sure.
But when everyone puts in that extra effort, even with, because I feel that way in like in church production, it's like, man, is anybody going to see this? Do they care? You know, like, but they do, and it does in ways that you and I in the moment could never imagine it to. And so, like, in the theater world, from my experience as an outsider, those every piece of that makes such a big difference.
Yeah, and I will say it is even more rewarding when somebody like yourself or Maggie would come in who has like an expertise. Say I tried something in lighting, and you're like, I noticed that. Like if that's your mm-hmm. forte or sound or mixing or what have you, that's been kind of neat too to have somebody who's in the industry. So that's nice.
Yeah, no, it's definitely people tell me, oh, the lighting's good and it's whatnot. But whenever somebody comes up to me and tells me like something very specific yeah. that like only I knew, Josh is usually he'll sit on side of me for shows if I'm lining shows and he'll react to certain things. I'm like, did it.
Hopefully that's a good thing.
It
the
is.
Poinsettias sometimes, are my favorite.
Sometimes it's not. I hear a. And I'm like, oops, missed that one.
I don't know what you're talking about.
He's a very expressive person.
That is for sure.
No, I did. So for Phantom, we had the organ, which was
epic.
Beautiful. But I had a friend come to the show, and I was like, I could take you. I was like, I had to go shut down everything backstage. Do you want to come? She's like, yes, I want to see the organ. So like we both walked on stage and like we rounded the corner and the organ was just like sitting on stage. She was like, what the heck? Why? Yeah. It's so big and massive. I was like, yeah, it's pretty awesome. But even I had nothing to do with making this organ, but I was so proud of everybody
really
who
was.
Did it. Yeah. I was like, this is amazing.
I went to bring her some hazer fluid and she was like, hey, come check it out. So we walked around the stage. She's like, this is the organ.
That's
and it was epic.
Yeah.
It was so
that was such a team effort.
Yeah. Pro level. Yeah. You know, like.
Yeah, they did awesome. Yep.
That whole show was, we've now done most of the, whenever I think of my largest shows, you've been a part of those processes
yeah.
just because of the, and all shows are massive. I mean, just the undertaking that they are, but some shows are like, they have an audience expectation behind them that are just like, you have to
yeah.
push it a little bit. And it's never, if you take me, Josh, out of the equation, there is... The show would suffice.
Yeah.
It would still happen and pull it together. But it is fun to see all of those shows come together.
Awesome.
And it's like an appreciation to be a part of those processes. So we thought this would be a fun question. Do you have any like dream parts that you wanted or dream shows that you want to do?
Okay.
So I kind of know your show taste, shows that you like.
Tell
like
me,
if you
listening
had to
audience,
be,
what my show taste is.
you like the a little bit of the golden age
yeah,
of
that's
musicals?
Sure. I do love a good love story, Jeremy. I'm not going to lie to you.
You said golden age, and I thought Golden Girls. I'll be honest.
That's true,
yeah.
too.
That's my wife's fave.
For those who don't know, golden age is like, what are golden age musicals, Josh? You can riff them a lot faster than I can.
Music Man, Bye Bye Birdie. I mean, now people would say Joseph is in that category too. But
no.
Carousel, Rodgers and Hammerstein, those sorts of, I know, it's good stuff.
Josh is looking at my face and it's just like the expression hasn't changed and he's just this slowly disappointed.
No,
like,
not
this
disappointed
was such,
at all.
Jeremy
no,
came to the first act of Phantom and left, and then Corey, his wife, came to the second act of Phantom.
Awesome.
They switched out.
That is awesome.
So do you know how Phantom
We're
ends, Jeremy?
In.
I have no idea.
Jerry's
the opener was
tremendous.
Epic, though. It was so good.
Tremendous.
So, yeah, what is your dream thing?
You know, it's interesting. I really split musical and non-musical into two different worlds. So if you permit me, I guess in the musical world, I do have a fond spot in my heart for like West Side Story. I think I'd like to direct that.
You've
at
done
some point. I haven't.
Oh,
I was
you
done.
Haven't, huh?
No, haven't done that. And maybe I don't know. I think what I've enjoyed, like we referred to Oklahoma, was like some of the more newer shows, like you had alluded to, Maggie, like people come with expectation. There's not much you can do with them, and that's fine. They carry themselves, and it's just like get out of the way and do it justice. It's always rewarding for me as a director if I can do something with it, and not all shows permit that because it's like like I said, you just get out of the way, or why would you mess with that? And I've done both shows. So I tend to enjoy the process more where we're able to kind of put our fingerprints on it. And we certainly did that with Oklahoma a little bit with that, the movie lead in and et cetera. As far as straight shows, I am a glutton for what's called British bedroom farces. A lot of fast paced comedy, a lot of doors, as the name suggests. So there's a play called Noises Off. It's an epic set piece, so you'd have to have a space to do it. But that's always fun. I love those tight comedy shows. So something like that, I think I would enjoy doing. I love Neil Simon, some of his work, which is kind of the other end. It's comedic, but it's more rooted in realism. There's some that, I love a good absurdist piece, too. So, I don't know. I'm all over the place.
Nice.
Yeah.
All-rounded.
Hopefully. Yeah. I went to Miami. I don't know if you know that.
Not the city. The
and
school.
A BFA, yeah, not just a BFA.
Not the Florida place.
So, we're coming up on the end of our time.
Oh, here. This is gone.
Way too fast.
Yeah. It always comes up fast. Yeah. So, we have one last question
for you. Oh,
you
do? Let me think. What
Jeremy, do you want to say or do you want me to say it?
I'll do it.
Okay. Jeremy's going to
So, Joshua,
put you in.
This is the part of the show where we ask every guest to share what their standby moments are. So, for those listeners who don't know what a standby moment is, it is. It could vary in different aspects and in environments and scenarios, but in just the heart of what why we ask it and what this podcast is about is the moments when we're in full pro and things are hot and heavy. There might have been some challenges, some drama, anything in between. And there's always a moment where you just kind of it becomes very surreal, and you kind of step back and you just realize the people that you have in the team and on the team and circling around you who's been a part of it, and all of a sudden just everything kind of clicks, comes together, and you have this moment of like, wow. Just stand by, enjoy it, stand in it, appreciate it, kind of. You realize the people in your life, your team, your partners. And so it's just we like to share that because that is the gist of like we love the arts, but the people is what makes it.
Mm. Yeah, I think because it's been most recent, but it truly fits that form. You just described the run of Phantom. And that was a moment for me, I think. And it was something which was spectacular insofar as how multifaceted it was. It was so complex. There were so many moving parts to it. But it was also something where there were so many hands on that show. I mean, walking behind stage. So there are times where I'm regulated to a certain place. They don't let me out of my pen a lot.
And we can argue about where Joshua should go.
That's true. So I'm normally in the back and somewhat tethered to something, so to prohibit me from getting involved. I like to walk around, especially try to get the kids pumped up. But walking behind stage and just seeing the amount of volunteers we had and the degree of excellence that these, if you will, lay people were, you know, these aren't people, and some of them were like professional makeup artists, but some of them were just parents who spent a lot of time doing this. The costumes are just off the, they're just amazing. The props, the sound, the light. I mean, it was so cool. And then you throw in the whole live pit, and you've got another 20 plus people in that. And then you've got all the special effects to it. It just that, and then you put it under the umbrella of community theater, and you're like, this is not community theater. I mean, it was just like, it's massive. And I think it was both like, wow, like I'm just a cog in this, right? So really humbling and just being like, wow, thank you for that opportunity just to be a part of this team. And then also with that of just, and not in a negative way, but just like, man, I hope these kids can grasp shit. Like, this just doesn't happen, you know, in every city. And even in some major metropolitan cities, you know, whether it be the resources, the time, the people, all of it. So I think that happened relatively quickly. And how you described it really was like a, whoo, like this is big. And it was a true testament to community and kind of like just the process to get there. And like the family, like sometimes you're like, oh, I don't agree with you. And how are we going to work through this? And then getting to that end and kind of seeing it go and seeing the response is kind of exciting.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I'm very appreciative of that show. And along with you, I always tell the kids, I'm like, if I can tell any of the kids one thing, it's to appreciate that this opportunity exists. Because I did not have community theater. I had dance school, which I'm grateful for, but this is a rare, rare thing to have for these kids.
Yeah, indeed.
Well, that's awesome. Well, Joshua, thank you. Thank you for, you know, carving out some time in your schedule to come and talk with us.
Yeah.
This is very fun, very entertaining. I've learned a lot about you, and it's like, you know, you and I met more recently.
Yeah.
And just crossing paths in church and getting introduced, and then, you know, seeing each other a little bit at some of the shows. I think my favorite memory of you so far is I didn't get to go to the Footloose. I didn't get to see the whole show, but I showed up. I think it was the last one I was there, and you were dressed in costume sitting in the back. And then all of a sudden...
That goes back to the tethering thing.
And then all of a sudden you disappear, and you're on stage in the middle of the show.
Did I do that? That might be something. I take some liberties with the director title sometimes.
It was so... it was, I don't, I just, I appreciate, someone who, is not just a leader, but a servant leader, someone who's, I think as you talked about the differences in your loves and things you care about, you're willing to do the things at the very top, and you're willing to go to the set shop where they get sometimes little to no appreciation and do something that you feel is unseen, but do it because you know it matters. And I think that just speaks to your character and like the community that you've built around you and what you're able to accomplish with it. So thanks for sharing that with
us. Thank you for having me. This has been a trip.
Thanks so much, Josh, for coming.
You are welcome.
For all your listeners.
One last, my favorite Josh story ever, and I think only a few people have, because a lot of people know that one, but it was during Les Mis, and it was during a very big number, and we were all very excited about it. And I was, we were in high intensity in the back. I think it may have been during the barricade number, I don't know, but all of a sudden, there was a very... loud noise that happened. I didn't know where it came from.
I didn't know where it came from until I fell backwards.
I looked over and Josh had broke the back off the chair from leaning back, from just like holding on for dear life, just like in suspense. And then the chair was just broken. And
no, there's some people who feel the moment. You know,
yeah, you
and
felt it.
There's some people who feel. The moment.
You didn't just feel the moment, you drove
it. That chair felt the moment, I'll tell you that.
Well, awesome. Thanks for not breaking our chairs while we're here. Not a suspense level of a show, but we appreciate it nonetheless.
This was great.
Appreciate you. Everybody's been listening. Thanks for coming. Thanks for joining. Thanks for sticking around. If you love it, you like it, share it. Send it to somebody. Show some encouragement. Just love people. Just
also,
do that.
Leave a review. Tell us who you want to see. We don't care about the review. Don't give us. Just tell us who you want to see.
We'll talk about drums one day.
Bye. Probably not. Probably never.